UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, presents Back to the Blood Mix, the Blood of the Saints.
Palace which is very beautiful residency and which had been completely ruined. The roof had caved in and there was rubble and masonry and shards of glass all over the place. She was crying and in her hand she had a little blue cloth band. And she told me, you know, I've got all my gold ornaments in this bag. And she showed them to me. And she was going to the Institute for the Protection of Historical Monuments in Dubrovnik. And she wanted to give these things to them. And she was 79 years old. And first of all, it's always very, very tragic to see an old person cry. And then she said something else which was frightening. She said, I'm feeling very bewildered. I'm feeling very lost. And I don't know why this war is being fought. And I don't understand why they want to destroy something so beautiful.
The siege began in September 1991. Dubrovnik, the jewel of the Dalmatian coast, is caught between the Dinaric Alps and the Adriatic Sea. If the land route is cut off, the only way of communicating with the rest of Croatia is by water. Situated at the southernmost tip of Croatia's ever-narrowing coastal frontier, Dubrovnik's isolation is almost complete. Today, at a time when events have forced the world's attention elsewhere, we propose to go back to the Dubrovnik. By December 1992, only two boats had been allowed to enter the Dubrovnik port. On the second one was the Times of India correspondent, Bajuna Ravni, whom we have just heard being interviewed by Croatian radio on the return voyage. We'll be hearing from her again later. The ship carried drinking water, medicine, food, and over 2,000 people. Refugees wanting to check on the family or returning for good, representatives of humanitarian organizations, a few journalists, and members of the Croatian diaspora, like Ante Čurjak, a 20-year-old Croatian-American who had decided to interrupt his studies to visit the homeland of his parents.
My father said I'm a nut. But my mother says, do you realize what war is like? Because she had lived through World War II. And I said, Mom, I want to do it. It's something I want to do. I said I was going to do it, and I'm committed to it. What's war like? How could I put it into proper words? I hate it. I mean, all those phrases like war is hell, it's true. But when I called my mom, she was, how are you doing? Are they shooting at you right now? I go, Mom, no, it's not as bad as you think. But then again, it's a lot worse than you could ever imagine it to be. I know what Croatia's like when it's full of life. I've been here and I've seen it when it's full of life. And to see Dubrovnik, and it's not so much the destruction to the beautiful buildings and the beautiful, we all know it's a beautiful city, but you just look at the people, just life is lost there. I mean, these people who are living, they just walk the streets and they really don't know what to do anymore. You could just tell it was a city that was so alive, and now it's not that it's dead, but it's fallen. It's somewhat unconscious. We're walking down one street, and it's the part where the lower city meets the upper city going up the hill. And to the right side, I was looking, there were the short streets. They weren't very long, and there was rubble all over the place, all over the sides, and you could see it. It was destruction. Then you look to the left, to the upper part of the city, which they hadn't hit yet, and you could still see plants coming out of the windows, and it looked like paradise. Paradise on one side and hell on the other. And I was walking that fine line right down the middle. And to me, that was the most disturbing thing. That's probably what I'll remember. And this one lady we saw in the catacombs, 96 years old, and she had been through 3 wars already, and for her, this was the worst one. A 96-year-old lady being forced to sleep on a cot in cold catacombs underneath the walls of the city. That, what else is there to say?
Among the handful of journalists aboard was CNN reporter Ron Salinger.
I think I prepared myself for the worst. It was quite bad. It's very saddening to see, for example, the Franciscan monastery, parts of that destroyed after having stood some 500 years. It is amazing to see how the people are coping with what they have to live with in Dubrovnik. We visited the people in the shelters just inside the old city walls, people that are living there, eating there, spending their lives there because they're afraid to go outside. To live for months under such conditions and to be in constant fear of being killed is really indescribable. They have a great deal of courage, and I admire them for that. It would have been very easy for the women and the children to get on this boat or some other boat and leave Dubrovnik, but they're determined to stay. The gentleman from UNESCO that we spoke to brought something to our attention that we thought was quite ironic. He said that Dubrovnik is a World Heritage City that we knew. What we didn't know was that Yugoslavia nominated it to be such a city, such distinction. And the signatories to the agreement all agreed to protect Dubrovnik. Well, it doesn't seem that there's a great deal of abiding by that agreement. We didn't see any outside forces in there to protect Dubrovnik. Dubrovnik is unique among the Croatian cities because it's such an international city. I think it's the city that people outside of can relate to the best. And I believe the more that the plight of Dubrovnik is brought to world attention, the more pressure we'll bear to stop the storm.
On the ongoing voyage, one of the Dubrovnikers returning home was Ivana Shapro, a 39-year-old computer programmer. During the three-day voyage, she sat hemmed in by her sacks of flour and potatoes, her jerry cans of petrol, and a chicken coop, exhorting her daughter to be careful about the 200 eggs they had stashed away at their feet for safekeeping. Ivana was going back to be with her elderly parents and her sister and her sister's children.
My daughter is 12 at home, and she wants to go very, very much. She's not afraid. She wants to be with friends. She wants to be with the family. It's very nice to go somewhere else for a while, but feelings are always going back to hometown. Even it's very dangerous to come back. We can't understand. It's very difficult to understand that war really is happening. It's so abstract. It can't reach your mind. Every day we are putting the questions again and again, is that really happening? I really dream because it's so impossible to believe that it can happen in the end of the 20th century. Something so bad, without a reason. I know what life will be there. Without water, without electricity, without food, in fact. Without windows, it's very cold now. But that's not so much important. Most important thing is that I'm a little bit afraid because I will not reach town which I left. Another town is waiting now. So I'm afraid of my first touch with the ruined and destroyed town, and it's very, very hard. Who has been in Dubrovnik? She can understand that. we are prepared to give our life to freedom of creation. We realize that each of us, men and women, have to give our contribution. We can fight in many ways. I have my job. I want to be useful as much as I can.
These shipboard interviews were recorded by Nada Radosevic of Croatian Radio, who today recalls her own impressions.
The Dubrovnik is something that we all, not only us in Croatia, but I think the whole world, sort of feel good about, and then suddenly it was disappearing. I came there, and the old city was absolutely 100% without any life. So, you know, it was just the end of everything, and it was the brother that we are all in love with.
Dubrovnik was always a lively international city. Its strategic position enabled it to become a great center of trade and of exchanges of all kinds between East and West, between India and the Americas and the Ottoman Empire. The city was founded under the name of Ragusa in the 7th century, but the basic town plan of Dubrovnik, as we know it today, dates from 1292. After the fall of Rome, it was ruled by Byzantium. From the 9th to the 12th century, it defended itself against foreign powers, but then recognized Venetian sovereignty while keeping its independence. The city republic afforded asylum to refugees of all nations, and between the 15th and the 17th centuries, its intellectual and artistic development caused it to be known as the Slav Athens, or the Venice of the East. Dubrovnik stood as a free republic until it was conquered by Napoleon in 1806, 9 years after the fall of Venice. It continued to be a flourishing center for the arts, with dance and music festivals, attracting the summer tourists, those descendants of yesterday's travelers and traders, up until September 1991. It was in November of that year that UNESCO consultant Colin Kaiser, former director of the International Council on Monuments and Sites, arrived in Dubrovnik. Fazlin Razmi, who had met him there during the notorious and destructive December 6 bombing, spoke to him later in Paris about his mission.
This mission was a rather special one. It's not the first time that UNESCO sent a mission into a country in war, but I think that it was the first time that a mission was sent into a town that risked being bombarded. The intention was to show the concern and solidarity of the international community for this World Heritage Site. We had to raise up the flags of the United Nations. We had to go to examine the damage in the bombardments of October and early November. We were also to set up UNESCO Bureau in Dubrovnik.
What were your first impressions when you reached Dubrovnik?
Well, we reached Dubrovnik in the night. The first real impression one can have of Dubrovnik is in the morning. Well, it was first of all a very beautiful day, and as we had to raise the flag, we had to go up on the wall, and there Dubrovnik was sort of unfolded beneath us. And I always think of Dubrovnik as a kind of bird with its wings unfolding, ready to hover up over the sea, because on the north, the town sort of runs up the hill. It dips down into a zone of Inso, which is where the sea came in about 1,000 years ago, and then it rises on a promontory. And so it's a little bit like a bird. It's extraordinary, beautiful. The limestone, which is now centuries and centuries old, has acquired a kind of patina. The roofs, which have the traditional tiles, which are green and ochre and yellow, give it a very soft impression. It sounds very small, it's about 500 meters by 300 meters. And the monuments are all scaled to human size. It is a town which is built for man, for men of all conditions. There are only a few statues to great men. The architectural style, with the exception of a few public monuments, and perhaps the Baroque churches, is what you would say in French is dépouillé. It is very, very simple ornamentation, even the great noble houses, which lends a very special character to this town. It's a home for all men.
It's not pompous and it's not grandiose.
No, it's not, because Dubrovnik has regulations to go back to the end of the 13th century, which is describe what kinds of windows are to be used, the width of the streets, how high the facade should be. And this is an old, old tradition which has carried on right into our century.
And when you arrived on the 27th of November of 1991, was the town peaceful? Was it quiet?
It was a very intermittent sort of situation. And before the St. Nicholas Day bombardment, because everybody calls it now St. Nicholas Day bombardment, there was a lot of nighttime shooting on the hill where there's the Imperial Fort. And of course, from time to time during the day, there was a machine gun which would sort of shoot a volley at the town. And the Dubrovnikers, who had no electricity and who had to have water brought in, and they also had to live this kind of existence where there would be shots fired, and nobody knew at what time they would be fired. This is the state of what we call psychological warfare. The people were, deep down, they were edgy, extremely edgy, but they had to go about their daily affairs. And so there was this mood, the thing that one could always feel. You have to be there a certain amount of time to see and to feel. The first part of our mission, which was a diamond survey, was extremely revealing because we had to go up into the houses to do it. And first, of course, we looked at the holes, and then we looked at the faces of the people. And we sat down with them at their tables, and they told us the terrible day when the 82-millimeter rocket came into the roof. And they gave us coffee and cigarettes, because we had to work about it, and they told us what happened. They talked to us, they wanted to know what was going to happen, and it was, of course, through such contact with people that we become extremely aware of the suffering of the Dubrovnikers.
What kind of damage was there at that time?
The damage before the St. Nicholas bombardment was rather superficial. It was above all damage to heads and people, because the Dubrovnik homes, traditionally the living quarters, up the top, kitchens, and so when you went to see the houses, what you encountered was some sort of damage on these areas with little pieces of metal that had come flown into the kitchen and into the bathroom and things like that. And this damage was very serious. It was psychological.
And then what happened after the 6th of December?
Well, the 6th of December bombing was quite something else. It began at 5:48 in the morning. But on that day, what they were using was, in fact, much more serious. They were using especially 120-millimeter mortars, which have very high trajectories, which come down and do considerable damage to roofs. They can break the big beams. But because their trajectory is variable, they can hit facades as well. I think something like half the roofs in the town were hit. There is also the question of dealing with a town which had earthquake damage in 1979, and of course it was a big earthquake and there was a lot of damage that hadn't been repaired. So you had the effect of detonations as well, and we found that there were cracks all over the town, inside of houses, which meant that there was kind of a general weakening of structure.
Did you make any kind of financial estimate?
Well, it was extremely difficult because the damage survey of a town which is being hit actually by about 650 mortars and smaller rockets, it takes a long time to go around and look and give an estimate of what exactly the damage is. And I think one of the most important things of our mission was, first of all, to attempt to identify priorities. Secondly, to help the local Institute for the Preservation and Conservation of Historic Monuments to do a big survey, which in fact, this is not one of the best things that the mission did, was that we helped them to elaborate the methodology. And this great survey exists now in the form of 7 volumes done by young architects of the Dubrovnik. Afterwards, there's a question of the safeguarding plan, which involves much more specific estimates for individual monuments, especially for the houses, the 9 palaces mainly.
So were you able to establish your list of priorities?
The suggested priorities, it was very, very important to get back into the houses the people who had been driven from them. We always felt that the great priority was this. The Dubrovnik is beautiful. If you look on the World Heritage List for its architectural and urbanistic values, but the blood of the stones is the people who live in it. After that, of course, there is the question of the monument. The concentration of the firing was particularly in the center of the town, towards the west and the south. The monuments in the eastern part of the town were hit in the roof, the balustrade, and the facade of St. Blaise were hit, and that's very bad damage. The cathedral John was hit. The monument that received perhaps the worst beating of all was the convent of the Franciscans, the balustrade over the cloister. But it's not just that. I mean, there's the whole wall of the cloister, which is now covered with the impacts of fragments. There's the library, the ships, and Toulouse were hit very, very often. And obviously, those are priorities from the point of view of conservation. But this is one thing I should mention, that it's very important, the whole question of the roofs. Because when you break open roofs, and then you put tar paper on, the tar paper is good for so long, and then you have to get the roof structures rebuilt, and the tiles put back on. Of course, one of UNESCO's notable efforts in the emergency part of the plan is to find enough tiles to go on the roof. To get back to the question of calibers and other types of damage, the photographs that we have of the Benedictine monastery are very, very revealing. And of course, the great preoccupation we have now is that there has been an escalation in this artillery. And they make holes which are about a meter in diameter, and they go through the stone walls, and they destroy about 4 square meters of roofing, including not just, I'm talking about tiles, I'm talking about the great beams and the entire roofing structure. And that's what's happening now, and that's what is extremely worrisome. Because these things can eventually kill a lot more people than the mortars.
How many people have died until today in Dubrovnik, and how many have been injured?
I'm afraid that I really can't answer that. I mean, the figures that one can give are a little misleading as well. Wars kill, but they hurt a lot more than just the bodies. They hurt the soul as well. And all these last bombardments have been terrible. They are far worse than any of the bombardments before. Far worse. Even if perhaps the casualty rate has not been high, thank God. But far worse in terms of damage to the people. They're living in perpetual fear. They have a feeling that the others are sort of playing with them. And that one day, it will not be 2 hours, but it will be 6 hours or 8 hours. And the damage will be an awful lot worse. I think it's important to underline the present situation, which is far worse than the situation in December. Tomorrow is simply a question mark. Nobody knows.
Dubrovnik is also the repository of human heritage. Can you go into that a little bit?
Dubrovnik was, for a very long time, a special place in the sense that it was its own little republic. And it sort of navigated through history for a very long time on its own. The Dubrovnikers are very, very strongly Croatians. But I think that over the centuries, there was a very strong and specific kind of mentality. It is a Mediterranean town. There were a certain number of memories that are kept alive. It's very remarkable to have people refer to the earthquake, and not mean the earthquake of 1939, but the earthquake of 1967.
What about the archives of Ragusa?
The heritage, of course, never can be narrowly defined in simply architectural or urbanistic terms. The archives of Ragusa are something that's very special, considered to be the most important source for the history of the Mediterranean. They go back to the 13th century. Along with that, there are the collections, which are in the great big libraries in Franciscan and Dominican monasteries, the Inquisition. There's also the very famous school of Ragusan painting from the end of the 15th century and the beginning of the 16th century. You should not forget things like the Museum of the Icons, too. The stone, that's one part of the heritage, and then there's the center part of the heritage, which is extremely rich.
Has that been damaged too, a great deal?
Well, I think that a certain amount was done to try to protect it. It's very difficult to organize the protection of monuments, and now with 155 millimeters, I don't know what you can protect. There was, I think, probably a certain shock at the beginning of the war in the sense that people didn't believe it could happen.
What is this done to the economy of the town? When you look at the long-range damage, even if the bombing stops, even if peace is restored, what are the fundamental changes that have now occurred?
Dubrovnik is not simply the old town. Dubrovnik is also a port. Dubrovnik has a certain number of small industries. And I assure you, one of the most devastating things to see was the warehouses. The bombardment has been very, very widespread. It's hit everything, every conceivable kind of object, and cultural or economic, as you can imagine. And I think there's a tremendous amount of reconstruction that has to be carried on outside of the old town as well as inside of the town. And Dubrovnik, of course, also is one of the great tourist attractions on the Adriatic coast. And there are a lot of hotels in the tourist structure that are being annihilated, along with the rest of the economic structure. One thing that should be kept in mind as well, and this is very important, is that the entire coastal zone that is going inland to the villages, the small towns, has been very, very seriously damaged. So the degree of devastation on the coast, in human terms and in economic terms, is absolutely enormous. And it will cause terrible problems after the war.
After talking to UNESCO consultant Colin Kaiser, Vajdi Naravni called the deputy mayor of Dubrovnik, Nikola Obulian.
How do you manage to keep the phones working?
With lots of troubles, but we do. Somehow, as you can see, when you have good people, you can do everything. But still, we are without electricity. Today, we are without water, so I hope that we shall manage somehow to repair the installations, and then we shall maybe have water for 2 or 3 days, but, you know, we have problems with water and with electricity. Now we are about 5 months without it. And the shelling is going on, like we can say that we are almost used to this bombardment. Especially we had the heavy bombardment on the 29th of June. It was a very, very, very heavy bombardment. We had 5 people dead, 15 wounded. And among these 5 dead, a child, 3 years old, a young boy, 16, a woman, all civilians. So, as you can see, the circumstances are very, very bad.
Now, there must be a terrible strain put on all the municipal services. How do you cope? What do you do?
How? It's very hard to maintain the life in a town which is always under the alarm. But we do somehow. People are coming out of shelters, then they buy something very quickly, then they get in shelters again. And so we are all risking our lives daily, but somehow we survive. I can't say that we are living, but we survive somehow.
What is the mood of the population today? Is it depressed?
People are quite depressed, I think. People are, like I say, angry. Angry maybe to the world, because, you know, Dubrovnik was always a touristic, open town to the whole world. Now we feel somehow that we are neglected, that the people all over the world are forgotten. Almost nothing you can hear now in the world about Dubrovnik. Like, we are forgotten from everywhere. The chap, the gentleman from the UNESCO mission who were in Dubrovnik in November and December, it was a good job. And I think it would be very useful if we can have UNESCO mission. I have been talking with Director General of UNESCO, Mr. Mayor. It was after one heavy bombardment. I told him that we would be very happy if we can have the UNESCO mission in Dubrovnik again. If the world doesn't intervene, we are going to have more destruction and more victims.
How long do you think it would take you and the municipality and UNESCO jointly, once the fighting stops, to get the city back on its feet?
who knows? I think it will take years. Surely it will take years.
And do you think the city has been psychologically damaged?
Most people are psychologically damaged. Most of them. Especially young people, especially children and the old people. They are not damaged but destroyed psychologically.
Rajin Rodney also asked Vesna Gamulin, who is the interpreter at the town hall, about life in Dubrovnik today.
I was born in the old city, in the center of the old city, in one of the streets that is now also being destroyed. My grandmother was born here for 400 years, now my family was in Dubrovnik. Speaking of the center itself, which is the historical center, we have normally inside city walls 4,000 people living. Now maybe 1,000 is left. And the old city is more or less like a ghost city. 5 meters from my house, direct projectile hits have been destroying. I had a convent next to me, nuns' convent. They have been receiving exactly on the same spot, on the same roof, repeatedly direct hits. The apartment of my father, which is next to mine, but in a higher house, has been completely destroyed. The house behind it has also been destroyed. We have a big house, which is the Post University Center. It burned completely. And it's dangerous spot. But there is no safe place anymore in Dubrovnik. And that's the tragedy. We have two main shelters, and they are inside two fortresses. Because Dubrovnik as a medieval city has city walls with four main fortresses, and only two are appropriate for shelters. In one of them is situated the aquarium. So you have these cool people inside the shelters with these big fishes in the swimming pool. We have very high prices. The food exists. We have food. But the prices have doubled and tripled because all our agriculture has been destroyed and we get our vegetables and food from scripts. And at the same time, we have no electricity, which means we have not been eating meat. We are all vegetarians. At the very beginning of the war, we said that we will never leave Dubrovnik, had we to die for it.
Aren't you afraid?
Yes. Especially when I hear the projectiles, and when you hear the whistle of them, when you hear the explosions, we are scared. But I only try to hide and not to be in the streets when we have the alarm and to stay in the place where I am. To go out on the street would mean death, definitely.
The question in the minds of the inhabitants of Dubrovnik today is, how could this be happening? Doesn't anybody care? Rajin Ravni asked Ferenc von Droste, director of UNESCO's newly created World Heritage Center, if being inscribed on the World Heritage List had been of any help to Dubrovnik, up to a short time ago, one of the most perfectly preserved walled Renaissance cities.
We have tried consistently to prepare appeals to the belligerent parties to respect the Hague Convention, to respect the World Heritage Convention, and all the other conventions which have to be applied in order that some principles of our civic society are respected. This has been, as we know, not the case so far. The war is going on. However, I think our appeals have alerted international opinion, the European community, reinforced international concerns, and the United Nations have sent peacekeeping forces in order to calm down the whole atmosphere, which is still an atmosphere of war and hatred. We have responded to the situation in sending observers to Dubrovnik, although this was risky business, so that we have the information to alert the international community in order to help immediately in the preservation of the damaged monuments and sites. We have set aside $200,000 of our budget. We have taken every penny and will do so also in the future in order to make it possible to immediately repair the roof. 2/3 of all roofs are damaged. This is very important because once you get humidity in the building, then the decay will start. So we have immediately constituted an emergency fund to help at least with the most urgent works to be carried out immediately. At the same time, we use our scarce funds to prepare projects in order to be ready in peacetime for large-scale restoration work. This money, of course, is of catalytic nature because we need partners. We need all countries to help in the work of restoration, hoping that peace will be soon established in this troubled area. If you take the new member state of Croatia, they just deposited their instrument of adhesion to the World Heritage Convention. They have now immediately access to emergency assistance under the World Heritage Fund. If it is well used, it can help to prepare projects and to establish international solidarity actions in favor of Dubrovnik.
The World Heritage Convention is a peacetime convention. So what can be done, in fact, to make this convention more effective?
The World Heritage Convention is very effective in peacetime. There is no doubt about it that this is a proven instrument. It has contributed to the safeguarding of many heritage sites. But the important thing is the World Heritage Convention, once adhered by a state party, should mean that the same properties which are on the World Heritage List should, to the extent possible, also be listed under the Hague Convention. The Hague Convention is particularly a convention which addresses the situation of an armed conflict. The World Heritage Convention has 127 state parties. The Hague Convention has 58 state parties. Just by comparison, you can see that only half of the countries, and not by necessity the same countries attain to the World Heritage, are so far state parties to the Hague Convention. We are, in the months to come, going to undertake in UNESCO a revision of the Hague Convention to make it a much more practical and much more effective tool, we hope, in the case of an armed conflict. The irony of the whole thing is that the former Republic of Yugoslavia adhered to both conventions. And it was Yugoslavia which placed Dubrovnik on the World Heritage List. And it is the same country destroying the same property which they intended to protect. This, I think, is an extreme case of non-respect of an international treaty.
To run this program, we asked the Director General of UNESCO, Federico Mayor, what he thought the organization could do about Dubrovnik at this time.
First, we need to have peace in the area in order that the rehabilitation and restoration of Dubrovnik can be implemented. We have already allocated, even if we are not a fund, $200,000. Most of them were already now being utilized for the most urgent damages. Unfortunately, it has been an evil government, and therefore now we are work again with the authorities of the city, but also our own experts that know the situation very well, a new master project. It's the first step, the most urgent matters, and the second, full restoration of the Dubrovnik. We know that about 30% has been damaged, and of the very important monuments, about 8%. Croatia has already good experts. They can assume themselves the restoration work, at least an important part. UNESCO is ready to provide an additional amount, but this must be also voluntary contributions from different foundations, institutions, donor countries, and also I think that it is a symbol. We would very much like to see also public contributions. I have opened one account in UNESCO in order that all of them can consider that they can contribute even modestly. And the media. The media can create the awareness that is necessary also in order, I hope before long, to see Dubrovnik, this wonderful Ragusa, again being a symbol of our history. They have already done quite a lot of appeals concerning Dubrovnik, and now is the moment for action. As soon as the situation permits, I would like for this master plan implementation to ask some donor countries, but there is, so many pressing needs, sometimes of hunger, children that are dying, population problems, that I consider also that in this case, for Europe, not only the traditional donor countries or the traditional institutions for financing, but also the people at large will be an expression of solidarity contributing to this special account in UNESCO. Dubrovnik has not only ancient monuments, is one of the best kept cities in the Adriatic. This represents a very important part of the history of Europe, of multiculturality, dialogue between different ethnias, and this is what I would very much like to keep as a symbol, as a flag, very visible for our common future in Europe.
Back to Dubrovnik, the blood of the film, was prepared and presented by Raju Naradhi and Aaron Sarahi at UNESCO, Paris.